Welcome to episode 3 of Standpoint. I'm so excited and honored to have with us today Lior Hayat. Lior is the spokesperson for Israel's Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Lior is a friend. Just for full disclosure, he served as a consul general of Israel to Miami, amongst other places, where I got to know Lior. He's one of the best people in public service that I've ever met. Serves with his heart, gives his time every single day, and it's just an honor to have him on Standpoint. You know, the audience knows that it's day 108 of the war between Israel and Hamas. And people should remember October 7th, Hamas infiltrated Israel. Over 3,000 people, Hamas, and actually some Palestinian civilians as well, or many Palestinian civilians as well, where they raped, slaughtered, killed, kidnapped hundreds and hundreds of people. Still today, we have over 130 hostages being held by Hamas. It's a complicated region. The United States has been playing a real interesting role, first really supporting Israel, now seems to be pressuring Israel with a lot of diplomatic pressure. The Europeans seem to be supporting Israel as well, but there's a lot of complicated things happening with the Houthis attacking the United States incessantly. And the only real way to understand it is to speak to someone who really has a good understanding of the region through the eyes of Israel, and that's why we have Lior. So Lior, thanks so much for joining me today.
Shalom, Gabe, and shalom to everyone watching us. I'm very happy to be here with you.
Thanks, Lior. First, on a personal note, I know speaking to many friends in Israel, it's over 3 months of a war, day in and day out. How are you? How's your family doing?
Thank God, we are all fine. It's been a rough 3.5 months. We are all okay, but actually, I think no one is really okay in Israel. October 7 massacre was a shocking day for all of us, and I think it was a shocking day for every Jew in the world, because in a way, it was the worst pogrom, again, the anti-Semitic pogrom since the Holocaust. It was the day that we realized that our neighbors are not just neighbors and not even just an enemy. Those are just monsters. If you've seen, and I think that you all have seen the atrocities that Hamas terrorists have done on October 7th, you understand that those things should never occur on the 21st century. And Israel will not allow and cannot allow this thing to ever happen again. And this is exactly why we are in this war. We have to change this reality. We cannot go back to the situation or the reality we lived in before October 7th, thinking that it only happened once. Actually, if we are listening to the leaders of Hamas, they are saying it themselves. They are just saying, we will repeat the October 7 massacre over and over and over again. So it's our duty as Israelis, it's our duty as the government of the state of Israel to make sure that we bring security to the people of Israel, and we will finish this war when Hamas is no longer in control of the Gaza Strip. All the hostages, the 136 hostages that are still in the hands of terrorists, will be free. And the reality in the Gaza Strip will be that it will not ever again threat Israeli citizens or the security of the state of Israel.
Yeah, look, for me, October 7th was one of the most difficult days of my life, just watching our brothers and sisters getting slaughtered in the way that they did, in the numbers that they did, in these peaceful towns in the South. But what happened after October 7th here in the United States and also around the world was also the realization of a big fear of the Jewish community all over the world, which is, a large swaths of society in the United States, in Europe, and all over the world really just turned very quickly, not only against Israel, but against the Jewish people, Jewish Americans, Jewish Europeans, Jewish South Americans, very quickly in a way that's reminiscent of centuries past in different places, whether it's in Europe or in other places in the Middle East, etc. So that really was a difficult part, and it's still something that we're dealing with here. But when we're talking about Israel and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, it's interesting to think about the role the United States has been playing. I mean, yesterday was a very difficult day, both for America and for Israel. America lost two Navy SEALs in what seemed to be they were trying to board a boat in a fight with Houthis, and they fell into the ocean, or one of them fell in, the other one went to get them, and they died. It's an accident that happens in war, definitely a tragedy of the greatest proportions. And also Israel yesterday lost 21 reservist soldiers in a building that they were apparently preparing to explode, to implode a building, and it was shot by an RPG, and 21 soldiers were killed. How do you see how the United States and Israel are really tied in this war in a manner that people don't seem to understand?
First of all, I totally agree, Gabe. The rise of anti-Semitism because of the October 7 is shocking, and actually that we've seen it all over the world, from Arab states in the Middle East to Europe, North America, South America, even Asia. And it's incredible that after a slaughter, so many Jews have been slaughtered in October 7, the reaction of some people is this hate speech against Jews, not only in Israel, but around the world. And it's a problem that we all have to face. But it's not just against Jews. I think that we've seen the reaction of pro-Hamas mob around the world that is actually trying to take this those events, those atrocities from October 7, and apply them to other places around the world. And one of the shocking information I've seen is that 62% of people in France think that the October 7 massacre could also occur in against them, not against Jews in France, but against French people because of the reaction they see in the streets from mostly Muslims that live in the country. You've asked an important question regarding the relations between Israel and the United States, and I have to tell you, we always talk about the importance of our alliance. We always talk about the fact that Israel has no better friend than the United States, and we share the same values. I think that this war is an example for that. United States, from the administration, president, the state secretary, the defense secretary, through the elected officials and the American people, stood by Israel and are still standing by Israel. It's true there are some differences of views and regarding the day after, but on the day-to-day dialogue between the Israel and the United States, we see that's the support we get on three levels. And I think the first one is a diplomatic level. This is important to say that the United States is leading the international community, especially the Western world, to support Israel. The second level is a military level or security level. And I won't go into too many details, but the support that Israel received from the United States from day one is part of the reason that we could keep fighting against Hamas and trying to eliminate Hamas from the Gaza Strip and release our hostages. And the third level is on the moral point of view. And I've spoken with a lot of people in Israel that told me that the fact that the United States stood with Israel from the President Biden and his famous speech, the don't speech, and other elected officials like the mayor of New York and many others, made them feel stronger, especially in the first days after October 7, when we really thought we are on our own. We were shocked as a community, as a society, and it was an important role that the United States leadership played in order to make Israelis feel more secure and to know that you have our back. And it's an important message. And we are grateful for the support we received from the United States on the last 108 days.
But Lior, just to push back, you know, there's definitely been a lot of support, but it seems like it's coming at a price where diplomatically now the United States is really pressuring Israel on, you know, something that really makes absolutely no sense. In fact, it's like grabs logic and just throws it out the window, where they're looking to reward Hamas and the Palestinians for this devastating terrorist attack by pushing Israel to give the Palestinians a state. From my perspective, Gaza was a state. Maybe it was a quasi-state, an almost state. They had definitely territorial control over the Gaza Strip, and we saw what it gave us. In Judea and Samaria, in the West Bank, it's the same thing. They have control over certain cities, and we see what it's giving us. Not only are they paying salaries of terrorists, including paying salaries to the terrorists of October 7th under Palestinian law, but the terrorist operations within those cities are tremendous. So, you know, the fact that the United States now is starting to push Israel to give the Palestinians a state, first of all, I hope that the government in Israel is strong enough to push back, because that's God forbid, a death sentence for the state of Israel at this point. But, you know, from a diplomatic standpoint, how difficult is it to deal with this sort of yin and yang, where the United States on one hand is being very helpful, they're saying all the right things, they're providing military support, Congress still hasn't passed the aid package, but hopefully it'll get there. But on the other hand, you're having this tremendous push for a Palestinian state, which Israeli society doesn't want and the Israeli government is also rebuffing.
Yeah, I think that there are two levels to that. First of all, it's a political issue, and I think that I totally agree with you. The Israeli society is against it, and I don't see a way to advance in that on that road in the near future. And I think that it's mostly talking about a longer period of time. I should remind all of us that Israel supported the two-state solution for a long time, and every time we came close to even signing a peace agreement, and both in 2000 after Camp David and then 2007 and 2008 with the Annapolis process, when the Palestinian leadership had a choice between peace and violence, they chose terrorism. And one thing that I'm sure of is that what we've learned as a society, as a country, after the October 7 massacre, is that we cannot allow this reality again. We will not go back to October 6. And you said it correctly. Gaza was a quasi, the Gaza Strip was a state. They had control over the Gaza Strip for 18 years before the October 7 massacre. And instead of making Gaza into a symbol or an example of a coexistence between Israelis and Palestinians and creating an economy or a health system, an education system, anything, they created the largest terrorist base in the world. And all the efforts by the leadership of the Palestinian, which was Hamas, was directed in attacking Israel and preparing this October 7 massacre. This will not happen again, because Israel will not allow another terror organization, because Hamas will not be there for sure, to rebuild its power in order to attack Israel. So we understand the pressure. I think that we have enough diplomatic ways to tell our friends in the United States, this is not the time. If you want to advance in a solution for the conflict, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, you shouldn't do that right after the October 7 massacre, which is actually rewarding the Palestinian for the massacre, for the attack, for slaughtering Jews, for raping Jewish women, for killing us, and then receiving, on the other hand, a diplomatic gift, which is their own state.
Lior, thanks for that. Can you tell? Let's travel north a little bit to the northern border. We know on October 7th, many Israeli soldiers were mobilized immediately, not to the south, but to the north as well, in fear that Hezbollah, Iran's proxy in the south of Lebanon, was going to attack from the north. There's been lots of reports that that was the plan, and Israel moved quick enough to stop that. And there's been a lot of skirmishes. Last I heard, two-thirds of the Israeli army was actually in the northern border, not in the south. I don't know if that's still the case. We're talking about not going back to reality that existed in October 6th. It makes me think so much of Hezbollah, because as you know, there was supposed to be a demilitarized zone in the south of Lebanon that was going to be controlled by the United Nations. The United Nations has had troops there forever, and all they've done is watch as Hezbollah has actually amassed the biggest arsenal that I know of in the world of rockets pointing towards Israel. Israel still hasn't, although there's been skirmishes, hasn't initiated any action in Lebanon. Not saying they should or shouldn't, that's not up to me. But it seems that by allowing them to still stay there, I think they've retreated just a few kilometers. It seems like we're doing the same thing on the northern border. Can you tell me a little bit about that and enlighten us on what's going on in the northern border?
First of all, I totally agree. The situation in Lebanon today is the situation that we've lived in till October 6th, which means we have monsters on our border that waiting for the right time to attack Israel. We've seen what Hezbollah is planning to do. We've discovered, and that was published a long time ago, that Hezbollah actually dug tunnels that ran for miles from the southern Lebanon towards the Israeli border in order to attack Israel from the with underground tunnels. We know that they are preparing the same kind of attacks as we've seen on October 7th. And we don't want to start a new front at this time, because the Israeli army is very active in Gaza, and we want to keep the focus on the Gaza Strip. But on the day that the focus on the Gaza Strip will end, we'll have to deal with the situation in Lebanon. And there are two ways to deal with that. There's the diplomatic way, which means the UN Security Council resolution from 2006, 1701, that says that no other military group will be southern from the Litani River but the Lebanese army, which basically means Hezbollah has to move between 5 and 15 kilometers away from the border from Israel. And if they do that, that's gives security to the people, the Israelis that live on the border with Lebanon.
But that's not likely, because that's been the ruling from the UN, which has no binding force over them for many years, right? Since 2006, and they just ignore it.
Right. No, so what? You're completely right. But the other option is that we do it ourselves, and when we say we do it ourselves, I think that everyone understands there is no other. We will not allow Hezbollah to sit on the border, to tread Israeli citizens on the border as they did actually for years, and especially since October 7th, because Hezbollah is not a Lebanese power. We have to understand that. They are controlled 100% by Iran terrorist regime. And if they actually act against the goals of the Lebanese government, and Lebanon has to understand that there will be a price for allowing Hezbollah to act from Lebanese territory against Israel. And the price will be against Hezbollah, but it will be also against Lebanon, because it's a sovereign country. They have the responsibility to stop and eliminate any attack on Israel from their territory. If they won't do that, we'll have to act on our own. And I think that what people see in Gaza in the last 3 months, they can imagine what can happen also in Lebanon. This reality, the situation that we live in today, will not continue after we'll finish with the situation with a war in Gaza. We'll have to protect our citizens. There are over 100,000 Israelis that were removed from their communities that on the border, in the northern border between Israel and Lebanon, and they'll have to go back to their homes, to their farms, to their jobs after this war ends. And if they only do so if we can guarantee their security, meaning that we'll push Hezbollah north of the Litani River, at least north of the Litani River. You're also right that there is an international power there, UNIFIL, that under the 1701 resolution should be the guarantee for Israel that Hezbollah won't be there. Unfortunately, we've seen the reality on the ground, and this reality means that UNIFIL has failed dramatically in one of these key objectives, which means not allowing Hezbollah to be active.
Saudi, yeah, you won't say it because you can't, but I will. The UN is a joke, not just in the Security Council or in the General Assembly, but also in their troops like UNIFIL, who you can see in coffee shops in the Golan eating pizza, drinking coffee, and hanging out while Hezbollah is actively working around them, and they do absolutely nothing. That's the same case with the UN in most places around the world, including in Gaza. But let's talk
Dave. Let me surprise you. The US is a joke, but not the soldiers.
The UN, not the US.
The UN is a joke, but not the soldiers that are there. The UN is a joke from top down. When you see the Secretary General of the UN legitimizing the Hamas terrorism, which is a disgrace for the role that he's playing. The UN was created after the Second World War to ensure that atrocities like we've seen on October 7 will never happen again. And instead of condemning terrorism, is actually legitimizing it. And when you see the UN, this Human Rights Council supporting Hamas, and when you see that the UN Women, which is one of the agencies of UN, is actually turning a blind eye to the suffering of Israeli women that were raped and abused and were kidnapped by Hamas, you see that this whole organization is corrupted, is influenced, is in some cases anti-Semitic, and there should be a huge change in the UN to that could bring them back to be relevant, because from what we see today, the UN is not just irrelevant, it's an anti-Israeli body.
Yeah, and you know, we're going to do an episode in February with Hillel Neuer from UN Watch and really go into the poison that has become the UN. What's unfortunate that while in the United States people understand the United Nations has really become a joke, that in other countries it's not the case. They make a decision and they have a hearing, and it's on the front cover of top fold of every newspaper in places around South America, in Europe, in Asia. So it really affects the way the world looks at Israel and looks at the United States. Something that's interesting, Lior, is we talk about looking at things differently after October 7th. Still one blind spot that we have in the West is our enemies tell us what they want to do, but we only hear what we want to hear. So the leaders of Hamas, of Hezbollah, of the Houthis, Iran, they say what they want to do. They want to destroy Israel. They want to destroy the United States. It's all in the same sentence. This is part of their plan. It's part of what they want to do. But still, somehow, everyone in the world wants to hear what they want to hear. And they say, oh, wait, let's just try to appease them and find a different solution. All they want is a little more money, a little more job opportunities, when that's not the case at all. Why do you think the world chooses to be deaf to the words of our enemies?
No, you reminded me a talk I had with a foreign journalist in Israel. It's his second visit to Israel. He lived here when I was the spokesperson of the embassy in Madrid, in Spain. He was deployed in Israel, and now he came back for a different outlet. And when he came back, he came to see me, and we had a long talk. And he said, and I told him about how it was before October 7, and I told him about how I view the situation and the fact that Gaza Strip is about to blow up. And he said, no, you don't understand. Hamas really wants peace with Israel, and they they'll agree to a two-state solution. And I said, it's funny that you talk for Hamas, because Hamas actually says everything that you said differently. They don't want to accept the existence of the state of Israel. They want to kill all of us. And he says, no, that's just them saying that. What they tell me is that they want peace with Israel. And after October 7, a few days after, he called me on a different issue. And I said, do you remember the talk we had? And he said, yeah, but there are other voices in Hamas. And I said, okay, this conversation is over. If you still think that Hamas still wants peace with Israel, you're either blind or you're a liar. And this is one of the things we've seen over the years, is that some people refuse to see the facts. When we say Hamas wants to destroy Israel, it's not just us trying to make a diplomatic or propaganda point. They are saying that themselves, it's part of their agenda, it's part of their ideology. And we've seen that even now. Actually, in the last few days, Hamas has published some excuses for what happened on October 7th, saying that, first of all, that the atrocities never happened. They happened. They filmed it themselves. When a lot of people around the world that saw the atrocity film that was 47 minutes long, all of the footage in this video is actually taken by Hamas terrorists in order to show their own families and their own people and their own commanders the atrocity that they are doing. The second thing they said, that they never thought or never intended to abduct or kidnap Israeli citizens, only soldiers, but they still have 136 Israelis that are held captive,
including a one-year-old baby.
Exactly, including Phil Bibas, celebrated last, if you can say celebrated, that turned one last week in his first birthday in the hands of terrorists. And they are lying to the world, and unfortunately, there are a lot of people out of ignorance, out of I think that a lot of them out of anti-Semitism are looking at that and saying, well, but Hamas says differently. Hamas is lying. This is a fact. We've known that for years. They are lying. One of the things I've learned in the last few days is that Hamas published a list of people who died in Gaza. They say that over 2,500 people died, and all of them are civilians. Not even one terrorist is on this list. We've looked into this list. A five-year-old girl has the security number, the security social security number, over 40-year-old men. They are changing the social security numbers in order to show that more kids and more women have died for the international community to condemn Israel.
Yet the world uses their numbers and regurgitates the Gaza Health Ministry, which is just Hamas.
Which is another name for Hamas.
Exactly. Right, it's another name. Exactly. And they take it because they get the information that they want. If it's if it feeds their narrative in the West, an anti-Israel narrative, an anti-Semitic narrative, they'll take the numbers gleefully and they'll run with them. So, I mean, it's really difficult. But I have a question for you from a diplomatic standpoint. We know, everybody in the world knows, anyone with two eyes and two ears knows that the country that's pulling the strings for Hamas, for Hezbollah, for the Houthis is Iran. But somehow, Iran really isn't even in the public discourse here in the United States. You turn on the news every single night, read the paper every morning, and it talks about the Houthis, it talks about Hezbollah, they talk about Hamas. But somehow, for some reason, Iran is off of everybody's lips. Why do you think that is?
I have no idea. I really don't understand, because you cannot understand what's going on in the Middle East without understanding that Iran is behind all of it. Iran terror regime is the one financing and arming the all terrorist activities in the Middle East, from Hamas and the Islamic Jihad in the Gaza Strip, to Hezbollah, to the Houthis, to other terror organizations that are actually attacking U.S. forces in Iraq. and in attacking the U.S. allies in the Middle East, like Saudi Arabia and the Gulf countries. We have to deal with the situation with the Iran as a in a global way, as an international community. It's not just the Israel an Israeli problem. It's true, we are the front line against the Iran terror activity. But what we've seen in the Red Sea with the Houthis is an example to how Iran can affect international economy by supporting terrorist activities against the boats that are going through the Suez Canal. This is something that will affect the lives of each and every person in Europe and the United States. And if we don't put a stop to that now, the effect on the international community will be huge. And there should be a clear response from the international community to Iran. Israel cannot deal with that on its own. We are dealing with some of the issues, I think, that a lot of people read on the news, that Israel is fighting in different fronts that has to do with Iran. But we will continue to pressure the international community to take responsibility and to stop the Iranian terror regime from continuing with the threat on the international community. It's not just economy. We have seen in the last few years Iranian terrorists that are trying to commit terror attacks in Europe, in Asia, in the United States, in the North America, in South America, and in Europe, in different countries in Europe. This is a threat towards peace. This is a threat towards stability.
I just want to correct one thing you said. You say that Israel's in Iran's front line. I think Israel and the United States together are in Iran's front line. And for political reasons, which is clear because we're in an election year here in the United States, like you know, I think that's the only reason why it hasn't been in the headlines every single day that the United States has been attacked daily, if not almost daily, by Houthis. United States military service members all over the Middle East, bases, etc. Iran is attacking the United States every single day. The U.S. may not want to be pulled into another regional war, but the truth is what the truth is, right? And it's the United States and Israel together need to combat Iran, because that will affect our lives here in the United States. So many people here in the U.S. or some people here in the U.S. are weary about it. Why should the U.S. get involved? Well, the U.S. is involved because they're being attacked every single day by Iran today. So, I mean, that's really an important point that people need to know, and we need to just inject into the public discourse here in the U.S. There's something that's been a pet peeve for me. I wrote a letter to the Wall Street Journal. It was published about a month or a month and a half ago on this. And it doesn't get legs because it's complicated. And I understand the complexities. But the leadership of Hamas is in Qatar. It's in Doha. 12,000 U.S. service members are just minutes away in a big army base there. Qatar has somehow been able to play both sides. They play mediator. But we know that Qatar isn't an open and free society. So the leadership of Hamas lives there. They live in a five-star hotel off the millions and millions of dollars, if not billions and billions of dollars that are sent to Gaza. They take it. They live there. They live under the protections of the Qataris. Qatar has been so successful of placing themselves as this perfect mediator between the Arab world but the United States, although it's an intertwined relationship because there's intelligence cooperation, there's a big army base there, which is saving Qatar from being attacked clearly. But the United States clearly has the upper hand in that relationship. But still, the U.S. is protecting the leaders of Hamas in Qatar. Israel can go in and get them any day of the week. In fact, I think the United States should go in and get them since there are still American hostages being held by Hamas. You know, what's your position or Israel's position on Qatar? Is it just a necessary evil at this point? Or is there any point where we're going to tell them, if you want to be part of the fray, you have to join the Abraham Accords, come on this side of the fence, you can't play both sides anymore, throw out Hamas from Qatar and stop playing both sides?
Yeah, you allow me to be diplomatic in this point, and I'll say that expect Qatar to help with the release of the hostages, they played an important role in the first round of the release of 110 hostages that were held by Hamas. This is one of the main goals of this war. And I think that the life of each and every one of the hostages is more important than me talking about this issue.
Yeah, that's fair and understood. As an American, it's aggravating as hell, if I could say, that our president and Blinken are not screaming from the rooftops every single day to get the release of the Americans, the American Israelis that are held hostage. We don't hear them talking about it at all. And that's an aggravation as an American, that if America is, and we are, the world's largest superpower, how come we're not using that to save Americans that are being held hostage? I know they're trying, but I think they need to be trying harder from my perspective. Look, there's so many complexities.
Let me just say, the United States is doing a lot to help the release of the hostages. They were playing a huge role and they're still playing a huge role in that. Some things are better kept behind the scene. I think that we get the support we need from the United States on this issue. From day one, they played a big role in the release of 110 hostages. They know exactly what's going on in the Gaza Strip with the hostages that were still there, 136 hostages that are still in the hands of the terrorists. And they are doing their best in order to help Israel with the local or the regional mediators in order to get their released as soon as possible. And I really want to say, because it's an important role, we have differences in the long term, but how the United States administration and our fellow diplomats and even the security forces that are playing a big role in that are playing a positive role in the release of all the hostages. This is an important part of the main part of our the reason we are still fighting in Gaza. We want to eliminate Hamas and we want to release our hostages, and the United States is 100% behind us on that.
Amazing. That's good to hear from my perspective. Can you just shed light? There's been a lot of conversations these last few days about potential deals. I'm sure there's a lot that can't be said, and that's fine. But what can you share with us about the deals that are on the table now, or if there are any real deals on the table now? For we've been hearing about potential 2-month pause to release the hostages. I'm not sure what the price is for that, but just tell us where are the discussions on that? What can be shared?
I can say that there are discussions through different channels. I think that it's in this kind of a negotiation, it always we get to a point that what we see on the media is not really what happens behind the scenes. And sometimes when it looks that there is no advance, there are actually an advance and it will be released later on. But I will say that Israel will not stop the war now for the release of the hostages. We will not allow Hamas to continue controlling the Gaza Strip for the release of the hostages. This is not our goal. We have to change this reality. We will not go back to October 6th. I think that this, if there's one message I can keep on for our viewers, is that what happened on October 6th, when I talk about October 6th, I'm talking about a reality where Israel is trying to live their lives on our side of the border, when Hamas is building a monster terrorist attack against us on the other side of the border. This will never happen again. And if we'll stop the war now, it takes us exactly back to October 6th, because the next October 7th massacre will happen again if we won't eliminate Hamas from the Gaza Strip.
Yeah, and this is a war, like you said in the beginning, not just against Israel or against the Jewish people, but against the Western world. And this is barbarity against civility. They say it with their own words, and it's important for the world to pay attention. Well, just to start wrapping, because I think we have some time restraints. Tell me any surprises you've had diplomatically, states or actions that have happened one way or the other, positive or negative, that a country that came out in a different way than Israel really expected.
I think that Israel received a huge international support from October 7th on. We've hosted more than 100 world leaders, from presidents, prime ministers, and foreign ministers. In general, I have to tell you, we were, I'm not sure the word surprise is the right word, but we were glad to see that the Western world stands with Israel on different things. I'm disappointed personally on the Latin American, some of the Latin American nations. I think that Latin America, the friendship between Israel and Latin America goes for generations, and the leadership, the governments of Colombia, Chile, and unfortunately also Brazil does not represent their people. We know that the people of Latin America support Israel, and their governments are pressured by Iran, by other countries in order to stand against Israel. I saw that world leaders that blame Israel for the October 7th massacre. I saw, I've been to The Hague 2 weeks ago with the Israeli delegation to the International Court of Justice, and I saw a group of South Africans from the elected official through the lawyers that represent them standing again in front of the ICJ judges and lying like I've never seen before. That was a huge disappointment to see how people are trying to present, first of all, to represent Hamas in front of the International Court of Justice, and secondly, to present Israel as the one initiating the violence. And more than everything, after a few minutes, when they actually did, even 3 hours of South Africa talking in the International Court of Justice, they've never mentioned even once the hostages. And the only time they mentioned the October 7th massacre is when they said that they condemned it, and they did not. They did not condemn the October 7th massacre. They actually condemned Israel on October 7th for what Hamas did, which is, I don't know if the word disappointment, because I my expectations weren't high, but I was sick to my stomach to see those people representing a terror organization that calls for the destruction of the state of Israel and the killing of all Jews, and standing as independent lawyers in front of the International Court of Justice.
For those who don't know, South Africa brought a case in the UN's judicial body, the International Court of Justice, or maybe we should call it the International Court of Injustice, for genocide against Israel. Not even ripe. It's a nonsensical case. It should be thrown out on its face. It shouldn't have even taken the case. Israel made a decision to defend it, and we're waiting still for a decision. With regards to South America, you know, we know the only bright spot is the new president of Argentina, Milei, who has announced that he's going to be going to Israel soon on his first trip abroad. He's going to move the embassy to Jerusalem, and he's standing with Israel through and through. South America has been a target of Iran and Russia and China for many years, and the United States, for whatever reason, has a blind spot south, which is very dangerous, because what's going on down there is a subject for another show. But Lior, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for your insight. Thanks for your friendship. And I really appreciate it. If there's anything else you want to say before we sign off?
No, I wanted to say thank you, Gabe, for doing that and giving us the time to talk to your audience. And I really appreciate it. And I want to say, end with an optimistic message. This is going to be a long war, but we will win. We will prevail. Israel will come out of this war stronger, and we'll send a message to all our enemies. Don't mess with us.
Yeah, and even more than that, I agree with that 100%. And even more than that, I was talking with some friends and family on Friday night, and we were talking about the war and after the war, the day after the war. And people in our generation, in my generation at least, we think about how we missed out on the building of the state of Israel. Christians and Jews from around the world came together and built the state of Israel, and it became a refuge for Jews from around the world after in 1948, after the War of Independence, and even through the 60s and 70s, people helped build the state of Israel. Israel then flourished to a way that Israel didn't need so much help anymore, became startup nation or scale-up nation with an incredible innovation center in agriculture and tech. And we sort of now just, as supporters and lovers of Israel, just get to go along for the ride. But that all changed on October 7th. And when this war is over, whenever it is, we are going to have an opportunity, we, the global we, to help rebuild the state of Israel, which it will need it. It's going to be in an economic depression. It's going to be in a difficult spot after a long, long war. But I will certainly be there. Hopefully you will as well, to help rebuild the state of Israel after the war. So thank you, Lior. Thanks for being here. Thanks to the listeners. Please be sure to follow the show. And this was the first episode on Rumble's new studio product. I hope you liked it. If there's any feedback, please let me know. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next week.
Thank you, and shalom from Jerusalem.